Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey, friends, and welcome to Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thank you for listening. I'm James Walton, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Second-term state representative and former House Minority Leader Christine Drazen of Canby on Tuesday formally announced her bid to become the first-ever Republican woman governor of Oregon and the first GOP candidate to win the post in nearly 40 years. Drazen had previously confirmed to various media outlets, including Now Hear This, Canby, that she planned to become the highest-profile Republican yet to enter the increasingly crowded race. The official announcement came Tuesday afternoon at Langdon Farms Golf Club in Aurora, with about 150 supporters, community members, staffers, and media in attendance. Drazen spoke for slightly less than 20 minutes, promising that she possesses the experience and demeanor needed for the challenges facing the state as a whole and millions of Oregonians. "I have been in the trenches," she said. "I have stood up to the special interests. My experience makes me uniquely qualified to stand up for you and to bring change to our state." In some ways, she offered a message of moderation and balance that was refreshing amidst the highly polarized, ultra-partisan rhetoric that has come to characterize state and national politics. "I worked in the Capitol the last time we had balance in the state of Oregon," said Drazen, who served as chief of staff for Republican House Speaker Mark Simmons in the late 90s and early 2000s. "We passed tax reform, we stood by law enforcement, we held criminals accountable for their conduct, and we stood for the jobs and the industries that for decades provided hard-working Oregonians the support they needed to support their own families. Don't you think Oregon needs a little bit of balance today?" Yet she was not hesitant to criticize the state's Democratic leaders, particularly current Governor Kate Brown and what Drazen called her, quote, "extreme policies and the impact they've had on schools, businesses, and crime, especially since the onset of COVID-19. "From the start of the pandemic, Governor Brown has repeatedly gotten it wrong," she said. "Her top-down mandates too often contradicted the latest science, left our small businesses reeling, set our kids' education back, and left thousands of Oregonians feeling isolated and wondering what the metrics might be for all of this to end. And while the governor was pushing the nation's first permanent mask mandate, she was attending cocktail parties in Washington, D.C., without one." Drazen vowed to fight inflation, as well as rising taxes and cost of living, rebuild schools, support law enforcement, and fix the homelessness problem in Portland and across the state. At the end, Drazen sought to frame her candidacy around hope and a better future for all. "This campaign is about you. This campaign is about us," she said. "This is about the future of our state and what is best for the people of Oregon. We are going to win this election, and we are going to fix Oregon together." After the event, Drazen fielded a few questions from reporters in the audience, and here's what she had to say.
"To serve my legislative seat for the remainder of my term. It's really important to me. And some of the biggest issues that people have brought forward over the course of this last couple of months in particular have all been about schools and an awful lot about making sure our schools stay open and the kids continue to be in the classroom, physically in the classroom, recognizing that, you know, that the quarantining rules and requirements are important and they're keeping folks safe and all that kind of thing, but that schools have to stay open. So that's a top priority for me. As we're going into the short special session, tolling. We should not be tolling existing lanes on I-205. And the legislation that I'm going to bring forward again this session will be bipartisan again this session, where we talk about how important it is to fund transportation in our state and have roads that work without doubling down and not increasing capacity and just increasing costs. It's just going to divert people off of the main highways into our communities. And that's going to be more dangerous. And so that is my second priority in this upcoming session. And then there's also really good stuff we're going to be doing around healthcare. And so I'm excited to be working on all of that. And the session's going to come up quick. It's in February.
What are your thoughts, Christine, on the current Republican candidates for governor and the primary contest that lies ahead of you this year?
Yeah, so, you know, I look at this field of candidates and it's so crowded with people. And it's crowded with people because Oregon desperately needs change. And there's a lot of good-hearted people out there that feel the way I do, that they're willing to stand in and do this work. And so I look forward to having these conversations. I believe that any number of folks that are running that aren't on the Democrat ticket would be an extraordinary benefit to the state. We will make progress if we can achieve change. It's just time for change. And so I look at the other Republicans that I recognize. I have so much more in common with them. And so I look forward to a respectful and robust conversation about who the right person is to represent the Republican values in the general election.
Presuming you do win the primary,
yeah,
how would you reach out to independents and moderate Democrats, which you would win, to win the general election?
I think the most extraordinary thing about this times that we're in right now is
so
that
divided.
Well, we're not really, I mean, we are divided in some ways, but the things that unite us right now are core values for what does it mean to actually be able to live the life that you hope for yourself and your kids. That is uncomplicated. I think that that's what all of us share in common, is that we want to be able to know that we can take care of our families, we can pay our bills, we have a job we love, and that our kids are gonna have the future that we hope for them and they hope for themselves. Like how you get there, the details are sometimes where we have this friction. But these larger values, these larger issues about what do Oregonians see for our future, that, I believe that can unite an entire state, not just Republicans. And I look forward to talking about how we can make our future better for all of us, regardless of your political affiliation, once we get into the general. But for now, I'm just working really hard to be the nominee for the Republicans. And I hope to be able to be successful on May the 17th. I've got a lot of conversation that I need to have between now and then. But I believe that once we get into the opportunity to be in the general, there's a lot to talk about that unites all of us.
The Canby Area Chamber of Commerce's Executive Director, Kyle Lang, has announced his resignation after nearly 4 years at the helm of the city's largest business networking and advocacy organization. He said he made the decision after, quote, much deliberation and introspection and discussions with family, making the announcement in his January newsletter to chamber and community members. Lang, a Canby native and a graduate of Canby High School, joined the chamber in April of 2018 after 12 years in private business and education. Chamber membership and events grew under Lang's leadership, and even despite the onset of COVID-19, which hit about halfway through his tenure. Lang worked tirelessly during the early months of the pandemic, sharing information about resources available to businesses impacted by the shutdowns and visiting many of them in person. Now, the last 2 years have taught me a lot about resilience, about the power of staying limber and loose and able to adapt in crises, and I wouldn't have learned those lessons if it wasn't for all you, your faith, and what we did through the COVID pandemic, and the strength of your belief in me as a local leader, Lang said. Thank you. That lesson has been a gift for me, for my family, and I won't easily forget my time here and what we were able to accomplish together. Tyler Neiser, president of the 10-member board that governs the chamber, said the organization would be sad to see Lang leave, but happy for his new opportunities. Well, we wish him the best in his new role, Nizer told Now Hear This Canby. On a personal level, I really enjoyed working with Kyle and value the friendship we have developed over the years. Kyle was well-respected in the industry and represented the chamber well through his actions and leadership. He propelled the Canby Area Chamber well beyond expectations. Lang's final day with the chamber will be January 25th. The opening for his replacement has already been posted online, and the chamber is actively seeking candidates. State and local officials, led by Canby State Representative Christine Drazen, are continuing to denounce Governor Kate Brown for the latest use of her clemency powers, including her November decision to commute the sentences of 70 prisoners who committed serious crimes as teenagers. Drazen sent Brown a letter last month that was signed by a dozen Clackamas County elected officials, including Canby State Senator Bill Kennemer, Clackamas County Commissioners Tootie Smith, Paul Savas, Mark Scholl, Canby Mayor Brian Hodson, Malala Mayor Scott Kaiser, and Oregon City Mayor Rachel Lyle Smith, among others. In the letter, Drazen and the other officials expressed concern for the safety and well-being of their communities, as well as fears that her move could re-traumatize the victims of violent crime. By commuting the prison sentences of violent offenders, you are not only reversing the work of our justice system to keep our communities safe, but you are prioritizing offenders and directly harming the victims and their families, the letter states. The officials also expressed concerns that Brown's decision represented a unilateral circumvention of the will of Oregon voters who passed the state's mandatory minimum sentencing law, popularly known as Measure 11, by nearly a 2-to-1 vote in 1994. As a state, we voted in Measure 11 for violent crimes, and our governor doesn't see fit to listen to the voters, Kaiser said in a statement to Now Hear This Canby. What we're hoping for is that the governor quits taking advantage of the voters of the state and listens to what the voters have asked for. Earlier this year, Brown commuted the sentences of more than 70 people convicted between 1988 and 2019 for crimes such as murder, assault, rape, and manslaughter while they were younger than 18, including four former Clackamas Countyans who were sentenced to life in prison as teenagers. Among them was Todd Daniel DeVilla, who pleaded guilty to the brutal murder and attempted rape of a 22-year-old woman in 1991 when he was a junior at Canby Union High School. The move also received criticism because of an apparent miscommunication from state agencies that resulted in some media outlets receiving the commutation list before the district attorneys and victims were notified. Kaiser said Sunday that Brown's office had not responded to the December 22nd letter from Clackamas County officials or a similar one from Polk County. However, she has defended the move in the past as being in line with Senate Bill 1008, which the legislature passed in 2019. The bill reformed Measure 11 guidelines significantly, requiring that youth offenders are offered a second look hearing halfway through their sentence. The individuals in Brown's November 2021 commutation order would not have been eligible for rehearings under SB 1008, as it was not retroactive, but she evidently chose to apply it retroactively to individuals who would otherwise qualify for a second look. Cases will be individually reviewed to determine eligibility for release on parole. Parole hearings are expected to begin in spring of 2022. All right, it's time for Cougar Country. Hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsicker, PC. When you need an attorney, you turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. You can call them today at 503-266-3456. And for the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country Pod. 2 weeks, two tourney championship games for the Canby girls basketball team. After a dramatic walk-off win over Putnam in the interstate shootout the week prior, the Cougars marched to the final of the Pacific Office Automation Holiday Classic last week, where they ultimately fell to Lincoln 48-59. Thursday marked the girls' first loss of the season under new head coach Ingrid McCoy, who missed the Cougars' season opening loss to Nelson due to her own wedding. McCoy, who inherited an unheralded group of girls, had already captured the hearts of the players. I think with a new coach and a whole new philosophy, we were all kind of skeptical of what this season would be like, star point guard Allie Mead said. But once we saw what Ingrid and the other coaches believed in and emphasized, we were willing to trust the process and come together in order to win. Suffice to say, the strategy has proved to be a winning one to this point in the 2021-2022 campaign, and Canby's first-round matchup in the Holiday Classic showed how far the team had come. The Cougs kicked off the game against Sunset slow with only 4 points in the first quarter, then mustered only 10 in the second to trail 21-14 at halftime. Last season, the Canby girls would have dropped their heads and likely gone through the motions till the final buzzer sounded, but not this year. Instead, the Cougars leaned on their trademark defense to dominate the third quarter. A wide-open triple from senior Mallory Block helped fuel a 21-8 run for the Cougars, who surged into the final frame with a 35-31 lead. The Canby D stayed alive in the final period to give the girls a 45-38 win. Even though we were down at half, we believed in our coach's philosophy and each other, Mead said of the game. So we were able to keep cool heads and fight through this adversity to get the game. Canby used the momentum from their round one win to blast Century 51-26. The blowout victory set up a championship date with the 16th-ranked Lincoln Cardinals, the Cougars' second tourney championship appearance in as many weeks. Only this time, a buzzer-beating victory would not be in the cards. The Cougs, whose defense had only allowed 34.7 points per contest prior to the championship game, gave up nearly twice that in the 48-59 loss. Despite the loss, there were still a lot of positive takeaways for McCoy, her crew, and Mead to see over the past week. The tournament taught us to not give up and to stay mentally strong, Mead said. Some of the games were ugly, get-it-out type of games where it was physical and we just couldn't make shots, so we needed to push through our struggles and persevere. And that'll do it for the news segment on this episode of Now Hear This Canby. Stay tuned for the rest of the episode. And as always, thanks for listening.
And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4-8 in the afternoon.
And welcome back to the ad sponsor section, where I get to talk to people about books, because I always drag Megan Waterman in here to be with me. Hi, Megan.
Hi. That's not a bad thing. Talking about books is always the best time.
I think you know of all people that I can talk about books endlessly.
I do.
Yeah. So, Megan, do you want to tell our listeners about what's going on down at the Book Nook?
Oh, at the Book Nook, we are getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah.
I know.
There's only one I care about. And by the time this ad comes out, it's basically over.
Are you talking about Halloween?
Yeah, I like spooky, scary stories.
I know you do. We've got a lot of great spooky, scary stories in right now.
Yeah, yeah.
We do, but spooky, scary stories are also good for Christmas. Do you have a favorite author that writes spooky, scary stories that are appropriate for Christmas?
You go with your classic Charles Dickens, right?
Yep.
Some Christmas Carol stuff.
Absolutely, that's my favorite.
That's the best. There's M.R. James. I know about him. He did a whole series of short scary stories for
Christmas. Short scary stories? I don't know. Christmas in general is kind of scary. It depends on how many people you have to buy for.
How many people you have to cook dinner for?
Right.
Speaking of cooking dinner, Thanksgiving is coming up.
Thanksgiving is coming. We have got some beautiful cookbooks in recently and some really cute kids' cookbooks just came in if you want to start cooking with your grandkids or starting to train up your little ones to cook Thanksgiving dinner so you can just sit on the couch and watch football.
And right now is the time to go in, right?
Yes.
Because waiting till Christmas Eve for that one special book that someone wants isn't going to work.
It's not going to be there. This year, it's no secret, the last year and a half has been a little crazy for the whole world. And that is really going to affect Christmas this year. There are going to be serious stock issues this year. So get your Christmas shopping done early. We've been working really hard to get as much inventory on our shelves and in our overstock as possible so that we have what you want at Christmas time. But if you know now a title that you want to buy for somebody for Christmas, get it now.
All right.
I might not be able to get it later.
And what is all three of ours? Because we also have Amy in the studio with us. What's all three of ours this season's book recommendation?
Okay.
Amy, what's your book recommendation for this season?
The Night Before Christmas.
All right. Yeah, that's classic. Megan?
And for me, my favorite Christmas read? Oh, okay, my favorite book that's coming out it's no secret, I'm an Outlander fan. I love Diana Gabaldon. There may be a cardboard cutout of Jamie Fraser in our bookstore. Book boyfriends are a thing.
Yeah.
And finally, book 9 is coming out towards the end of November. So you will not see me until I finish reading that.
And mine is the Dungeons & Dragons Feast of Legends or whatever, the table. So make sure you guys come on down to Book Nook. Megan, where are you guys located?
We are on the corner of Grant and 2nd in downtown Canby.
All right.
On the Canby Conversation today, we're so excited to be talking with Bryce Morrow. He's the founder and owner of Oregon City Brewing Company. Hi, Bryce. Welcome.
Hi, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we are here on site in the former Canby Public Library and future home of the Canby Beer Library. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, it looks very different from the last time I was in here a few years back. Why don't you give folks a little bit of an overview of what you guys are doing here and how it's been going so far?
Yeah, we've removed now, I think, a total of 6 40-yard dumpsters, which are tough to, unless somebody's really in the construction trade, it's
right.
Hard to really put an eye to how much material that is, but it's massive.
Yes.
And then another 4 40-yard dumpsters
sort
full
of like
metal.
Maybe your average residential swimming pool, if you
yes,
can picture that.
Something
about
like that.
About that much material.
Yeah.
And you said 6
yeah.
of those.
That's right. And then another 4 of metal. Yeah, which is
wow.
crazy. But yes, all pretty well cleared out. We're on the home stretch now of demolition, and it will be moving toward having a kind of multi-tenant community gathering space
yeah.
with
yeah.
a total of, we'll have 4, 5, 6. There'll be a total of 7 tenants, including us as the anchor tenant, which will be the Canby Beer Library.
Yeah, yeah, of course. You mentioned you're about 2 weeks in to the demo.
Yep, yeah, about, you know, some breaks for the holidays, but about, 13, 14 days of work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You guys did, I maybe correct me, but a similar project when you built Oregon City Brewing. It was in an existing commercial building, right? You tore it out, kind of renovated. Is this similar? Is this really different? Is this? It's obviously bigger.
Yeah, I would say that this is larger, but you know, it's a it's a better building, more simple structure, I think. It's not in a floodplain, so we love that.
Although all this rain we've been getting, we'll see, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, knock, knock, yeah. Yeah, it's been, we like to get his hands on early on, yep.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me more about the building and what you like about it. It's interesting to see, you know, how it looks now all demoed out in just this. It's kind of stunning how much space you have once you get all the walls and kind of get down to the bare bones.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that would catch attention walking in here would be these parallel cross trusses that run continuous. And then on the other side is really just pure timber. So, you know, I'm not sure what the timeline is, and nobody at the city has been able to really define it, or county, but these were two separate buildings.
Okay.
It was constructed around 1970. One of them might have predated it, and then they essentially built another building right next to it, sandwiched it with the steel I-beams, and then knocked out the CMU concrete wall that was in between. So, there's that, concrete floors, but it's really a continuous span, you know, by and large. There's six columns, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me again how much square footage you have here.
Just shy under 11,000 square feet.
Okay, cool. And remind us kind of what the planned project is going to be, how you plan to utilize all that space. Like you mentioned, obviously, the anchor tenant and primary use and kind of most visible user is going to be the sister location of Oregon City Brewing.
That's right.
Beer Library, but that's not all that's going to be.
That's right, yeah. So we'll take up approximately 5,200 square feet, and that will be the home to our barrel aging program. We'll eventually do some cider production. But it'll be it's going to be a very open seating kind of environment, and then you'll be able to really feel like you're connected with the brewery, because there'll be 300 and some French oak barrels that'll be stacked up, which I think a lot of people are probably familiar with seeing more in a winery application, but we do all kinds of beer aging in spirit barrels and then winery barrels. And then facing into that open brewery area will be four micro kitchens that are approximately 310 square feet, four different cuisines, different independently operated restaurants, essentially, that are self-contained. So you'll have plenty of options that'll be family friendly. And then on the other side of the building, there will be two tenants. There'll be a salon tenant and then a retail boutique that'll take up approximately 2,700 square feet. That'll be separate entrances.
Yeah, yeah. From someone just a normal consumer and someone from the outside, I think we all know, you know, obviously COVID has impacted and changed in some ways the hospitality industry. The industry, you know, continues to evolve as all industries do anyway. As someone inside the business, can you tell us a little bit about kind of some of the biggest shifts that you're seeing in the restaurant and craft brewing industry, and how this project, you hope to kind of fit that into the marketplace as it shifts?
Yeah, I think Tyler's been, since the pandemic, really outdoor dining has been just a huge thing, and having comfort level, I think that's ebbed and flowed a little bit, and obviously now in Oregon when it's cold and wet, a lot of people don't think about that outdoor dining space.
Right, don't long for that quite as much.
Right, yeah. But you know, I think the a key thing that we will have here that we don't have in Oregon City is just a huge continuous space. You know, these are 14-foot tall ceilings. We'll have factory-style, large operative windows that are going to pull open. And then 18-foot wide overhead glass doors that look like garage doors. So they'll pull open. So you can kind of have nice airflow. But I would say that's the overall thing that we've had priority on over the pandemic, is people being comfortable being on premise.
Yeah.
And then providing people a variety of different options to be able to order at their convenience. You know, not everybody is comfortable queuing up at a bar. They may want to order from their phone on a QR code. Those kind of things where we didn't do that certainly before the pandemic, but it's been very popular.
Yeah, absolutely. The building here, as you see, as we, I can see, listeners can, of course, but it appears to be in really good shape. I asked, you know, these trusses appear in great shape. I almost thought they were new construction because they look so good. Is that, am I right that, you know, we've got some good bones?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. A building like this is kind of like an onion. It's like peeling back layer after layer. This was right underneath where we are here, Tyler. This was a drop ceiling with a drop ceiling with a drop ceiling. So it was actually three.
Three.
So it's very difficult to really tell
the
overall condition. But, I think it's in good bones. And it's sturdy construction for sure.
Yeah. Can you tell us any more about the micro kitchens and the other tenants that you're going to have here and what people can ultimately find here at this location?
Yeah, I don't want to disclose who the tenants are yet just because, you know, how things can change or... but there will be, completely divergent restaurants. It'll range from Texas-style barbecue to kind of a Latin fusion to Chinese, so it'll be diverse offerings.
Nice.
I think it'll be really cool for us to try to do some complimentary beer pairings around that.
Yeah.
And so we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, sort of some combo kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like that. Very divergent and diverse from each other, and also in sounds from how you described it, some new things to the area here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think this concept would be most akin to like a food hall kind of a concept that you would see. There's a couple in Portland. Yeah, and kind of similar, you know, it's basically what we did in Oregon City. They're a little bit larger. We converted a corner office in 2016 into a self-contained restaurant that Olympia Provisions has been our tenant there for the past 5 years.
And gotcha.
So same kind of thing. You know, I don't think if I hadn't already done it before, we probably wouldn't be doing this, but it's worked out really well. Very complimentary.
Very early on, the thinking, I believe, was to try to have, like, indoor food carts, and it sounds like the micro kitchen is basically that, kind of built in.
Yeah, and I think a nice in-between a food cart and a restaurant where, you know, you're obviously indoors, just climate-controlled.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of the infrastructure that you'd have in a brick-and-mortar restaurant that is taken care of, grease trap, Type 1 hoods, all those kind of things, and some cold storage that you're just not going to get in a food cart. So the square footage of the 310, that's roughly, you know, you roughly get like 160 square feet within a food cart, and then an 8-foot ceiling.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get more roughly about double the space here. So I think it's a nice in between.
The kind of food cart pod built around a tap house that, you know, you continue to see those popping up. We've got one in Malala now. There are a few in Salem area. Well, it's sort of in an indoor way. That's kind of what you've got going on here. What do you think is the appeal of that? I guess a variety is a big draw.
Yeah, I think a great thing is, you know, if you're coming, you know, I think of my own family often, it's hard to please everybody.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's one of the attraction of going to how do you please everybody? So going to a food cart pod is always great in that way.
You know,
you can kind of please everybody, and here it'll be a different experience where you could come back, you know, multiple nights in a week or in a month, and you could maybe never eat the same thing. And certainly with, you know, 45 plus beers on tap, you certainly won't be drinking the same thing every time. So, a lot of options.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are we still going to have the tenant spaces here on the north side of the building where we're standing?
Yep, okay. That's right.
Can you tell us more about, obviously no names as well, but kind of what people can expect to see there? I believe they're filled.
They're filled. The whole thing is fully leased.
Yeah. So a mix of like retail, right, or...
Yep, so the large side here that'll take up approximately 1,600 square feet here, which is about two-thirds of what you see from these posts over, will be the salon tenant.
Okay, great.
They'll have two large roll-up doors that are facing 3rd Street.
Gotcha.
And completely self-contained.
Yeah.
So it'll be a lot of natural light. And then facing the corner will be a kind of a boutique retailer.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, and very complimentary in nature.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing I wanted to ask you about, Bryce, I know you and your team over in Oregon City are very community-minded. That was a big part of digging into the, leaning into the history of Oregon City and its brewing history, kind of fitting your model and your approach to the community. I know that was what you were looking at here. What appealed to you about Canby? What kind of stands out to you? And what do you hope is complimentary about this location to the community?
Well, we love the downtown area of Canby, and we've had our eye on this for a long time. Yeah. You know, we've talked about it over the past couple years. We love the resurgence of downtown, and you know, my father and partner, he worked at Key Bank, right kitty corner from here. It must be deja vu for him, as a branch manager for of several years, and so we would come down here all the time, and I loved
it. There needed to be a brewery in that library. Not
yeah, right. Yes. So we love the community feel from all the events in the summertime.
Yeah.
The county fair. It was great seeing all the Christmas events are around here. All the lights at Waite Park, and we just think that there should be a brewery in this town, so we're excited to do it. And I've been absolutely overwhelmed with the amount of support. I mean, we will get people in here, you know, while we're doing demo. They're like, hey, you know, I'd love to come back and help this weekend. I've got a dump trailer. And so that's amazing. You don't get people who ordinarily don't know you who are like, hey, I'll do some manual labor for you.
Right.
For some reason, that happens in the brewery industry. So, we couldn't be.
Well, the free beer.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we couldn't be more excited to be here in this community.
Yeah, well, you're here hands-on doing some work yourself. That's pretty cool. Is that kind of just your approach as an owner?
Yeah, certainly when I'd say in general, if you're in the brewing industry, you better like work to some level. Yeah,
yeah.
But we when we start on a project, we like to do what we can. But we'll be passing this off to a general contractor here soon.
Yeah. Any idea? Obviously, you know, we probably don't want to be too specific. You know better than me, but you know, approximately when folks might be able to visit.
Yeah, we're aiming for summer, and definitely, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so huge for our business, and the other businesses that'll be here. It's always that summer window, I would say, from like late spring to mid fall. That's huge, you know, where people start to think about, gosh, it would be nice to have a beer right now. So
yeah
we definitely want to hit that time frame. And so far so good. It's only been good news so far on the demolition. So cross your fingers. Hopefully early summer 2022.
Awesome, looking forward to it. Bryce, I don't know if there's a website yet or a Facebook page. How can folks kind of follow and stay in touch and just stay tuned to what's going on here?
OCBeerCo.com. And same OCBeer handle on Instagram or Facebook. And we'll keep on showing updates, photos, anything that we can.
Yeah.
And then we'll probably be doing some a little bit more specific, I think, social media just for the Canby Beer Library and trying to show progress and as the project continues to unfold. So
folks are excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think for looking at this building for long enough, and I think for the community of having it vacant for 5+ years and being such a key part of downtown.
Yeah.
Everybody's excited,
and we
can't wait to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, this building's right in the heart of our downtown. When it was a library, it was very much culturally the center of many of the community for many folks, and you know, so it's great to see it being revitalized in that way. But also to see someone, you know, you have community ties here, but somewhat from the outside, sort of want to invest in our community is so great and so appreciated. So we love that.
Well, thanks.
Thanks, Bryce.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out which TV option I want to use when DirectLink turns off their video services in January of next year. It's so confusing. Do you know there's about 48 million streaming services to choose from? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that you're probably better off than you think. If you have DirectLink's Easy Video TV now, you're already using a streaming service. But listen, you don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping their members transition to their next video provider. The company has an extensive informational website where you can compare popular services, and they host live tutorials on streaming TV options to help you decide.
Well, hold the phone. Are you saying that they're actively trying to help their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does. I mean, I guess it's one more chapter in their long history of wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free classes for the past 12 years that teach our neighbors about the latest technology and internet security practices. And don't forget, they also orchestrated that popular bingo game last year that helped keep everyone entertained and connected during the lockdowns. They've also launched special programs to help keep our students connected at home during the pandemic, and partnered with the city of Canby to give free Wi-Fi year-round at three local parks for locals and visitors alike.
Wait, DirectLink does all that?
They do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet and voice services in town. So, to learn more about DirectLink services or how they can help you transition to the right video service for your home, visit directlink.coop today.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
And we'll draw this episode of Now Hear This Canby towards a close with another rendition of Canby Then. Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. Nestled amidst the banks of three rivers in the verdant Willamette Valley, Canby area residents are no stranger to precipitation or even its occasional byproduct, flooding. But few events compare to the storms and flooding of 1996, which pushed river and creek waters far beyond their banks 25 years ago, displacing thousands and causing millions of dollars in damage. The first thing to remember is that there is not one major flood of 96. In fact, there were three distinct and devastating flooding events that year. The year was also bookended by major floods that are sometimes conflated, one in November of 95, which is often remembered as the Veterans Day flood, and another in January of 97. When the skies opened on Monday night, February 6th, 1996, and they stayed open for 4 days, Milwaukee resident Tim Lane was initially reminded of that nightmare from 3 months earlier when heavy rains on Veterans Day pushed the chocolate brown waters of nearby Mount Scott Creek, spilling over its banks and into his and his neighbor's front yards. "We got rid of the gravel and the sandbags 3 weeks ago, stored it in a pile out back," Hale, dressed in a rain slicker and knee-high rubber boots outside his home on Relane Apartments on Southeast Lake Road, told the Oregonian at the time. "We didn't think we'd have this problem again." It quickly became evident, however, that not only was Hale and his neighbors having this problem again, this time it would be far worse. By late Tuesday afternoon, firefighters and rescue workers had massed along South Shady Road near the Mullalla River, where water had seeped into the garages and basements of some homes and created moats around others. More than 40, mostly elderly residents, were being evacuated, with the city of Mullalla scrambling to set up an emergency shelter for those who had nowhere to go. "I wonder what we did to make Mother Nature so mad," Roy Ferris, 47, wondered aloud, a white cowboy hat keeping his head dry. One older couple waited for a rescue from one of the fire department's five boats, surrounded by a pile of suitcases and bags. "Ma'am, we can't take all that," a firefighter told her. "How about a toothbrush?" In Canby, the flooding was particularly bad along the Mullalla tributary known as Alder Creek. The neighborhood was known to be prone to high waters during heavy rains, but few on Alder Creek Lane remember it ever being as bad as it was that February. "Now, this is bad. This is the first time I've seen flooding this high," said Kim Schaefer, as she and her family waded through knee-high water in front of their house. But some of their neighbors, like Charlotte Sweeten, said they would stick it out, ignoring Canby firefighters' pleas to evacuate. "I'm not really worried because I pray a lot," Sweeten told the Oregonian, explaining that she had lost 50 to 60 fir trees in a devastating windstorm 2 months earlier and welcomed a baby calf during a freak ice storm the week prior. She named it Frosty. "I guess God doesn't want us to get bored with this weather." Hydrologically speaking, the storm was a confluence of several unusual factors: a record amount of rainfall, coming on top of an above-average February snowpack, and cold temperatures. As John Leah, a hydrologist for the Natural Resources Conservation Service, described it at the time, "The ground is frozen solid and won't absorb any runoff. It's like dumping 10 inches of water all at once onto a parking lot." A similar situation occurred in December of 1964 when Oregon experienced a cold snap with near-record snowpacks already in place, followed by a very warm and wet storm that brought record rains. The resulting floods were the worst in Oregon's history, killing 15 people and causing $148 million in damages. The floods of 1996 did not surpass those of 32 years earlier, but they came extremely close. Vehicles were swept away like toys, and raging rivers roared like lions as low-lying residents fled to higher ground by the thousands, and downtown store owners sandbagged their premises throughout the Willamette Valley. Logs stored at Canby Sand and Gravel were swept downriver like toothpicks, wedging themselves against bridges and riverbanks as the rivers created new tributaries and farmlands that had never been seen before, washing away trees, homes, and anything else in the way. Highway 99E north of Canby was closed due to the threat of mud and rock slides due to the torrential rain. A total of 5 Clackamas County bridges, including Knights Bridge and Whiskey Hill Bridge, and more than 100 roads countywide were closed that week. Mudslides and water flows slowed down drivers on 99E, Highway 224, Highway 43, and numerous Interstate 5 and 205 exits. A man from Waldport, 25-year-old Tom Otter, was killed instantly when a tree swept up in a rock slide crushed the roof of his truck while stopped near Philomath. His 2 young children, who were with him in the truck, miraculously escaped injury. When the heavenly floodgates finally closed on February 9th, muddy waters enveloped and in some places consumed hundreds of Canby homes and businesses. The worst damage was along the industrial strip of 99E near the Mullalla River. Dozens of businesses were swamped and about 215 people were evacuated from Riverside RV Park. The mobile homes, more than 100 in total, were relocated to the Canby Square parking lot and unused land just east of what was then Jarbo's Grill, now the Wild Hair Saloon. "The only thing we need now is a good earthquake," Mark Jepson joked to the Canby Herald. "I just wish property values were cheaper in Canby because I don't think the RV park will be open to the public anytime soon." About 125 Barlow residents were also evacuated as a result of dikes giving way upstream. Some residents fought to protect their property with sandbags from Canby Builder Supply and sand provided by the local Boy Scout troop. The Canby Grove Conference Center, just west of Knights Bridge, was one of the hardest-hit places in Canby, with floodwaters pouring onto the 54-acre grounds by Wednesday and chasing 40 residents, staff, and family from their homes. "I believe the Lord prepared us for them," said Joanne Gorton, as she and her husband Jerry, the center's assistant director, welcomed 14 of the displaced staff members to share their 3-bedroom home. Most of the city was spared. The water did pool at the intersection of Grant and 99E and outside the library on North Holly Street. In neighboring Mallala, the flood was an unmitigated disaster. By Wednesday, the power was out. The city's sewage treatment plant has burst a dike and was spewing raw sewage into Bear Creek, and the city's water intake pump has failed, meaning there was, as the poet ironically said, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. Other than that, it's a peaceful day in the neighborhood, a frazzled city administrator, Harvey Barnes, quipped to a reporter. Barlow resident and Canby Sand and Gravel watchman Mike Molgaard woke Thursday morning to a scene from a nightmare, in his words, a wall of water outside his front door. It was frothing white and carrying trees, whole trees, roots and all, he recalled. Too scared to grab more than his jeans, a jacket, and his old dog, Barney, Molgaard jumped in his truck and headed for higher ground, eventually using his flashlight to signal an Oregon National helicopter crew for a rescue. Barney refused to get into the chopper, so Molgaard left the window down in the truck so the dog could jump out and swim to safety if need be. I've got my life and my health, he told a reporter after his ordeal. That's the main thing. The dog, by the way, was fine. And that'll do it for Canby Then on this episode of Now Hear This Canby. As always, thank you for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or
that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.